The holidays can sneak up fast, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Uncommon Goods has a host of unique, high-quality, and often handmade gifts, many of which are crafted by independent artists and small businesses. That attention to detail often means products are made in small batches, so the best finds can sell out fast, like the book of famous Dodgers newspaper clippings ordered on Uncommon Goods that I received as a birthday gift. It was a special present catered to my liking that can't be found anywhere else. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers, history buffs, and diehard baseball fans like me, to foodies, mixologists, and avid gardeners. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're not only finding the best and most unique gifts for the people you care about, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice and have donated more than $3 million to date. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive, deep left, way back, gone!
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Dylan White. Dylan, it's a big day. We're going to skip all the, you know, pleasantries, get right into it. We released our top 500 for 2026 on the site this year. Kind of flip-flop things from where we had it over the last couple of years, where we released everything positionally and then released the big list in January. I figure let's build the list, let's have everybody in order, and then we'll start doing the positional ranks, and then it'll be a lot easier to make adjustments as we go on to the big lists and update those as well. Certainly trades, free agency type of stuff, all those things could potentially move the needle a little bit, I think, especially in terms of, how people are talking about players. That's certainly something that, you know, while you want to say that, oh no, this list is just, you know, exactly what we think and that's all it is, we do try to take the temperature of the room and, fantasy players and managers, you know, and their feedback and the sort of players that are hot in our own leagues and the stuff that we see, try to take all of that into consideration. So we try to balance the two, of course, use a lot of different information, but I would say this is in season. We do some maintenance to the list, but I would say our biggest reworks are typically this time of year where it's this list. And then by the time we're updated in March, there could be other reworks. Injuries are another big thing that could obviously happen over the off season. And then once we get into spring training, someone needs to have Tommy John surgery, you know, tears or UCL, needs to have some other, you know, reconstructive surgery, a brace or something like that, a knee problem, a shoulder, all these things come to light or happen over the course of the off season. And that stuff could certainly move the needle on this list. So this will be ever evolving and changing, but I think kind of giving us the shape allows us to coordinate all the other positional rankings, the updated FYPD that will be coming shortly, the updated fantasy rankings that will be coming shortly. And there'll probably be some movement within the list as well. So, 100%. I think that's my sort of description and rundown of the big changes in the list. Dylan, I didn't know if you had any sort of big picture thoughts on some of the changes we made. I kind of stuck to the prospect side of things. I let Dylan dig in on his MLB stuff. There's few people that I trust on the redraft side of things in fantasy as much as I trust you. And you got the paychecks to prove it on the NFBC site. So, I don't challenge you on that at all, but my expertise is obviously prospects and, we take into consideration robo scout and all that sort of stuff. I've compiled an even bigger fantasy prospect list that will come out sometime later this season. But I kind of stuck myself on that side. So what are your thoughts on everything?
Yeah, I think he nailed it that in season, it's kind of maintenance. You have, you're anchored by the previous month, and then you're making your ups and downs based on news, injuries, stuff like that, new roles. This one, I just started from scratch. I didn't take our August list and then make tweaks. I wanted to start fresh and not kind of be blinded by it. And since I'm in a couple draft champions right now, redraft leagues on the NFBC, I kind of have a good pulse on the barometer of who's hot right now in 2026. I think in dynasty leagues, although it's, you know, a three-year window and it's, you're thinking long-term and long-term sustainability, this current year, like the in season year, the 2026 basically here, is the most important year. That would be weighted the highest, etc. So having a good idea of who's being valued highly and who's not is very important. And then, you know, you plug in the prospects, like you said, and then we get a nice list. So I do expect, since it's early in the off season, as like reliever sign, a lot of the relievers will move up and down. Maybe we'll talk about it later in this episode, but like the relievers, I think, are a bit lower than we would normally have them because those roles are going to change. People are going to sign, people are going to be traded, people are going to lose their roles. So really only the ones that seem pretty assured of being closers are kind of up high. I've made the mistake in many dynasty leagues where I trade for a player who, like, roster resource says is the closer right now, and then of course someone else comes in and he loses the role. So I've been burned by it, so I don't want you guys to be burned by it. So I have the, you know, kind of the influx closers who are on the bubble down a bit lower. So that's my kind of high level look.
Yeah, and I think you know, as we were talking about the mechanics of building the list and just you know, our approach, I think relievers were something that we were very much in line on. And I think, like you said, like outside of a handful of elite guys, roles can change so drastically. I mean, I think you can even look at the most elite guys. Look at a guy like Aroldis Chapman. You know, it was sort of like, is this guy going to be a closer or a starter for a little bit? And then eventually he's a closer. He's an elite closer for a whole bunch of years, right? And then all of a sudden, some crack show. He's bad for a couple of months, loses the job, and then he kind of is a setup man in a few different places. Even when he comes to Boston, he's kind of a setup man, right? Coming into the season, he wasn't the presumed closer. And then in season, some changes were made, whatever it was. He tried to throw strikes or was targeting things the first time, whatever the story was they were selling us. And he's an elite closer again. But even with a guy with that level of talent and stuff and track record, he can fall off and lose his job. It's one of those positions where, yeah, I think you have to approach it on a need-based approach. Excuse me, that was really bad. But you need to approach it, you know, based on your circumstances and needs, right? There are times you're going to have to probably pay up a little bit for an elite reliever, right? You know, to get saves, and in saves holds leagues, which I think we're seeing more and more of these days, those leagues saves maybe, and like specific roles are maybe a little bit less valuable. And honestly, I think in a lot of my solds leagues, the best additions and bullpen guys I've grabbed have been like the guys that are getting the hold opportunities over like the first month of the season. And you can get them for like $3 waiver claims. You know, so like, I think how you approach bullpenning is really like the game itself. Like that's one of those like major components of success in fantasy that, you know, if you make the right trades, if you make the right, you know, additions, if you keep the right guys and just cycle it through, just looking at skills over roles, I think that's the best way to approach it. And as we get into some of these relievers in a minute, we're going to talk about a guy who had the skills for a long time, never had the role, and then kind of backed into it. And he's climbed up our rankings, actually. One of the few relievers that did.
I think, just to your point, Aroldis Chapman's a great example because at the beginning of last year, I traded for him as he was just kind of being hot. And because he was 36 or whatever he was and was on the fringe, and Boston had maybe Liam Hendricks, maybe Justin Slayton, maybe Garrett Whitlock, wasn't clear who the role was going to go to, I got him for dirt cheap because there was a chance, there was a reasonable chance that he would, say, retire at the end of the year because he was just a regular guy in a bullpen. At cut two, at the end of the year, when it was clear he was the reliever, he was the closer for the Red Sox, and he was excelling and doing really well, I needed saves in one of my leagues, the one I'm in with Tim McLeod, and we just wanted to get saves to kind of nail it down, and so we went who we thought would be the cheapest, Aroldis Chapman, because he's old, maybe he doesn't have dynasty value, or Trevor Megill. We offered Roky Sasaki for Aroldis Chapman, and we were turned down. So at the beginning of the year, I got him for like a third round FYPD in the following year, but at the end of the year, the other guy wouldn't even take Roky Sasaki. So it just shows how wild the valuations of someone like Aroldis Chapman could be, just from what, even within the same season, like 3 months apart.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think that's the thing with relievers, is it's just so difficult to project out things in a 3-year window, which is what our approach is. We try to look at everything from like this sort of 3-year window within dynasty. And even in terms of how I place my prospects, and I wrote about this in the intro a little bit, is I try to place them sort of right below the tier that I feel they can reach, like in a reasonable expectations. Like Connor Griffin, there aren't many reasonable expectations with Connor Griffin. The expectations are through the roof. And I think when you look at the five-tool nature of him, his ability to play multiple really valuable positions, which is going to keep him in a lineup. And, you know, the fact that you can put him probably anywhere in the infield, you can put him anywhere in the outfield. Like, he's going to find a place to play. They're going to be able to make moves in that lineup, especially in Pittsburgh. But anywhere he plays, you know, he's going to be able to fit into a defensive role, which is going to, you know, add at bats. Beyond all that, it's power, it's on base ability, it's speed, it's all the category stuffers that you want. He's going to be a top of the order type of hitter and a run producer and a guy that, you know, can drive in runs as well. So a guy like that ranked 21, I have him that high because I honestly feel like he can be a consistent fantasy first rounder within a couple of years. It wouldn't even be totally shocking. He breaks camp with the Pirates this year and has a phenomenal rookie campaign. I really wouldn't write that off as an outcome. Now, do I think it's probably like a 20% outcome? Sure. But it's still a reasonable expectation that could happen. And if it doesn't happen this year, I feel even better about it next year, right? So I think, you know, just in terms of how we place players in lists and the room that we sort of leave for the move up or for the move down is all sort of baked into this. And it's baked into that idea of looking at things from a 3-year window.
Yeah. And of course, it goes without saying, our typical caveat is like, you know your league, understand your league. We have, speaking of Connor Griffin, we have him right beside Kyle Tucker. If you're competing this year, you probably want Kyle Tucker over Connor Griffin. If you're rebuilding, you probably want Connor Griffin over Kyle Tucker. So it doesn't mean, you know, no matter what, you can trade one for the other. And they're interchangeable, of course. It depends on your circumstance and your context. So, you know, use these as a guide. Use them as a kind of a general feeling of how what equivalent players are, kind of similar tiers, similar feels, and use that to kind of build your trades. But, of course, know your league, know your circumstance, know your context.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, Dylan, I want to talk about a couple handfuls of the biggest movers within the list based on our last update, which was in August, and this update now in November. We'll be right back.
Hey, we've told you about Huel's new Daily Greens ready to drink can, but also we do not want to forget about the OG.
Your favorite. You love that chocolate peanut butter flavor. I do. You and Kratz love that chocolate peanut butter flavor.
That's my favorite one.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. Breakdown. The vanilla? Also good, but when they sent me the chocolate peanut butter, oh, it's like a dessert, but it's not.
35 grams of protein, no added sugar, gluten-free for your boy, under $5 per meal, because it's
a meal replacement.
A meal in a drink. 6 grams of fiber, 27 essential vitamins and minerals. Huel makes healthy eating simple. They also just launched into Target stores nationwide. Try both products today with 15% off your purchase for new customers with the exclusive code FOUL at Huel.com/FOUL. Use that code, fill out the post-checkout survey to help support FT. All right, and we are back. Baseball America Fantasy Podcast, Jeff Ponce, Dylan White. We are talking about the updated Dynasty Top 500 list. Dylan, I want to go through some of the biggest movers within the list. The biggest one overall is Nolan McLean, and I think that's obviously for great reason. We liked McLean. I thought we were pretty high on McLean. We had him as a top 100 fantasy prospect. He moves up from 399 to 58, and I don't even think it's overreacting. He was phenomenal down the stretch. His ability to generate outs in a variety of fashions, whether that's via the strikeout, whether that's via ground balls and weak contact consistently, swing and miss stuff, you know, command, all of it's kind of there. I view him, particularly in dynasty leagues, I view him as a top 15 starter at the moment.
Yeah, I don't think that's crazy at all. I think he's, like you said, he has a variety of ways to get people out. His curveball is, I think in one of my RoboScout articles, I said it was maybe the best curveball in the minor leagues, just incredible spin rate, incredible movement. It's like a Ryan Pressly curveball. He's a starter, doesn't have much mileage on his arm as a converted, like recent to starting in this kind of capacity. He may not have ace upside, but he definitely showed that he kind of was hinting at it. So yeah, he's gonna be a consistent starter for a long time. He may not be like one of those. He may not be like a Hunter Green where he has this incredible ceiling, but you know, injuries or it's in short bursts, etc. It's gonna be just kind of like a consistent excellent, in my opinion. So yeah, that's a good one. I just seeing the big movers. I saw there's a lot of the rookies where we got a good look where they had the final month of performance. And Nolan McLean basically had, some of the best final month maybe of any of those rookie pitchers.
Yeah, and we'll get to a couple of those guys in a moment. I want to harken back to something we said about 10 minutes ago about relievers and role changes, but skills being something you could chase. Cade Smith has been one of the better relievers in baseball for the last, two or three seasons. He finally finds himself in the closer's role due to unforeseen circumstances with Emmanuel Clase. That is not an additional risk factor that we should be factoring in our relievers. It was one that came up in Clase's particular case, but that's not one I would necessarily be concerned with. But I would imagine Cade Smith has the reins to sort of run with this job for a few years. And you know, the skills are there. Also a guy that can go like five outs on a save, maybe six outs in the save, which is super valuable. I think in Hades saves holds leagues or solds leagues, he's been a valuable reliever in that format for a while. But you know, I think you look at it now and the fact that, you know, he does kind of have that bird dog seat in Cleveland. I view him going into next year as one of the best closers in baseball. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that.
Completely agree. I mean, he's kind of like what Andrés Muñoz was. He was, you know, incredible Ks, great ratios, but, you know, behind Paul Sewald at the time, Sewald, whatever. But now that he's got the role, he's like one of the first closers being taken in a redraft. He's still relatively young. Cade Smith's basically exactly the same. Probably better control than Munoz, maybe even better ratios. Pretty good team as well. And so now that he has the role, he's just going to excel, in my opinion. So, you know, we had him lower in August because he was the setup man, and maybe he's good in solds leagues. Those aren't really the main leagues that people play. That's starting to become more and more popular. But you know, when you're second on the depth chart, you're not going to be in the top, you know, 200. And but now that he's, like you said, in the bird dog seat, he's up there. So I mean, in redraft leagues, he's going, I think, top five closers. And I think he totally deserves to be there.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. 100%.
Another thing, sorry, it's just I don't think even the Guardians, like the risk of the Guardians signing a big name closer, and then it's not going to happen. And so, like, it's pretty safe, right? So that's another reason in his favor.
Yeah, I'm totally agree on that. I wanted to get into some of the rookie pitchers here that you had mentioned. We were already now Schlittler was on the list, 442. Obviously, what he did down the stretch was phenomenal. Trey Savage was on the list at 299. Schlittler moves up more spots. Savage we have just outside the top 50. I think you look at what he did. What Schlittler did was great. What Savage did against some of the best lineups in baseball in pressure situations was phenomenal. And I think there's probably going to be people making the case that he's the best prospect in baseball going into next year. I would take the hitters over him, but you know, if you're somebody who doesn't follow prospects and sees this guy come up and do what he did, I think those people are going to be like, how is it possible that this guy isn't one? We have him as the fifth best prospect at the moment. We had McLean as the sixth best prospect at the moment. So he is actually ahead of Nolan McLean. He's just so funky, so weird. And the ride in the fastball, the way the splitter cascades off of that, especially when he has it. The fact that, you know, he has a slider that doesn't move glove side really, or very much if it does. It's just a really weird look. And I don't know if guys are ever going to necessarily get used to it, especially with how deceptive his sort of like, you know, like plunge in the back and then like straight over the top delivery is. Maybe we're going a little aggressive on this, but I truly believe that's how you Savage is being valued right now, as if he is an ace. And I mean, he was outperforming other guys, and at 22 years old, has a lot of tread still left in that arm.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe we're being aggressive, but I think we might not be aggressive enough for what perceived value is, for all the reasons you said. Like, going against like the three best offenses essentially in the playoffs and dominating, 27 innings, just looking at it, I'm just pulling up the stats now, you know, 358 ERA, but a 295 xFIP, 12.7 K per nine. And like, this is against Otani and Judge and Cal Raleigh. Like, these are against the sluggers of the league. You know, it's very easy to create a narrative saying, you know, he's 21 and doing this in a high pressure situation, in the highest of pressure situations, and excelling. So just imagine as he learns how to pitch and learns the rhythms of the game and learns how to, when he doesn't have his best stuff, how to excel. Like, it's just, you can easily dream that the best is still yet to come. And then the caveat is, you know, it's only been 27 and a two thirds in the postseason and 14 innings before that. So he's just a baby. People have had flashy seasons. Brett Laurie from the Jays, another Jay, had one of these kind of phenomenal fairy tale endings to a season or whatever. And people kind of overreacted and were too optimistic. So, you know, there are caveats, but just the way people are viewing him, it's very easy to make a case that he deserves to be as high as he is and maybe even higher.
Yeah, I think that's extremely well put. Well, let's move on to Cam Schlittler then. Schlittler also moves up quite a bit. Another guy who, you know, had a memorable historic performance in the playoffs, not quite on par with your Savage in terms of the lineups he was facing, but some pretty good ones. He moves up 333 spots, so one of our biggest movers, up to 109, 24 years old, big stuff. Obviously in an organization where they're going to win a lot of games, a lot of pressure on him. He seems to handle it. So, I think Schlittler is a player that I may end up having quite a few shares of, if I can use the term shares without sounding like a dink.
Schlairs.
Yeah, exactly. Schlairs. I'll probably have a few Schlairs of him next year, just simply because I feel like he's going to be in that like second, third tier starters. And the strikeouts are there. You know, the opportunity to go deep in the games is there. And, you know, the Yankees will invest in the bullpen again. Whether they fix it or not is a whole other conversation. But any thoughts on Schlittler?
Yeah, it's funny. So Schlittler was a RoboScout guy because he gained a bunch of miles per hour. He was dominating AA, AAA. It's funny that I was in a draft when he was having that playoff performance, or Connelly Early had his playoff performance, or Savage had his first kind of playoff performance, and they immediately were taken in the drafts, like that night, while the performance was going. It's interesting because I'm in a DC right now with Vlad Sedler, Smata from Prospects Live, Steve Weimer, who won the DC overall not last year, but the year before. He took Schlittler in the 11th. Yesavage went in the 10th. So these guys are still being taken 10th and 11th. Burns went in the 9th. Mizurowski went in the 9th. So people are still kind of skeptical of Schlittler and Yesavage, which I find interesting. Schlittler has the Yankee thing. He was performing kind of in season before Yesavage came on the scene. Maybe even before McLean came on the scene. Schlittler came up a bit earlier. We talked about high pressure situations for Yesavage, Schlittler, along with Nolan McLean in New York, you know, the media scrutiny there, he kind of thrived as well. So he's kind of showing he was doing it for a long time, couple months. He's kind of showing that he can handle that. So I see him being a very strong pitcher for a long time, kind of like in the McLean mold. I don't know if he has the huge upside that we've seen flashes up from Yesavage, but you can't go wrong with Cam Schlittler. I mean, he has the stuff to back it up. It's not like he's throwing 91 and getting away with deception. He's high 90s. It's pretty overpowering stuff. He's definitely going to be a good one.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, and that's why we moved him up as much as we did. Can we talk about a little prospects now, Dylan? Do you mind if we talk a little prospects on this Baseball America podcast? All right. Phil Yesavage and McLean are technically prospects. Some of the guys that moved up big, Carson Benj moved up big, 431, moved up 304 spots. He's now our 18th ranked prospect. He's up to 127 on the list. Just in front of him is our 17th ranked prospect is Rainel Rodriguez of the Cardinals. He moves up 255 spots. And then another is Carter Jensen, moves up to 212 from 437. That's 225 spots. Last name I'll throw out here is Caleb Bonimer. I'm a huge fan of, have been for a while. He's our 22nd ranked prospect. He moves up from 357 to 144. I am all in on the Bonimer train. Choo-choo. You know, I think all of these guys, you know, Bonimer, Benj, Rodriguez, Carter Jensen as well, who did he graduate? I couldn't remember. No, he didn't.
I don't think so.
So all these guys are prospects, you know, with legitimate upside. I think you look at Benj as a guy who's close to the majors, could probably contribute pretty quickly, and is going to be a multi-category booster. Like, not a guy that's going to like carry you in any category, but he's going to probably run a little bit. He's going to hit for some power. Not a ton, but enough. He's going to hit for batting average. He's going to get on base. He should produce a fair amount of runs. Could be a guy that at one point in his career hits at the top of the lineup pretty consistently. I look at a guy like Benj. I think you can even look at his stat line this year. 281, 385, 472, 17.7% strikeout rate, 13.1% walk rate with 15 home runs, 22 stolen bases, you know, 87 runs, 73 RBI. So really good numbers across the board in 116 games. You know, a guy that moved really quickly as well. This was, you know, a 2024 first rounder, guy that was a two-way player that wasn't a pitcher, was a hitter. And I think anytime that these guys commit fully to one side of the ball, they typically see some improvement. Sometimes it can be drastic. We've already talked about one of these guys that was drafted by the Mets and Nolan McLean you know, that went the pitching side of things, but really big jumps in their first year doing one thing only, both for McLean, you know, and for Benj. Rino Rodriguez, I just feel, is one of the most talented young bats in the game, regardless of where he plays long term, whether it's first base, whether it's catcher, whether it's a little bit of both. He's got the hit tool, he's got the approach, he's got huge power and really good angles. Analytically, he is one of the better prospects that's out there when you look under the hood at all the advanced, you know, StatCast style data. And the last one that I'll say here is Caleb Bonnemer. I said I love Bonnemer, another guy with really good skills, good power, good athlete. I think there is, it's not one for one, but there is some very strong comparison here with Gunnar Henderson, just in terms of the type of player, the type of prospect, the type of athlete. He might have a little bit more skills than Gunnar. Gunnar might have a little bit more top-end EVs. Bonnemer's EVs are still pretty good. These are some of my favorite prospects at the moment. Guys I want to have rostered all over the place. What's your opinion, Dylan?
I agree fully. Carson Benj, just he finished in AAA, so he's on the verge, and his StatCast data was great. 105.6 90th, 80% contact, doesn't chase. Like chases at a less than average, like better than average clip. Bonnemer, I know you've been talking about it for a while, so I haven't been able to get him off any of my league mates just since you've been talking about it for months. Reinel, you know, I was being risk averse. I was taking it slow. He was so young. He's a catcher. Yes, the data was popping, the underlying data as well. And it was just, well, let's see if he can sustain it over a few months. And he just kept sustaining it. So, you know, we finally caught up to where he was showing he belonged. So I really like all those picks, of course. I still, you know, maybe I'm being stubborn, but Reinel being a catcher, I'm still hesitant. I don't want to trade the farm for him, but like Bonnemer and Benj, like these are surefire going to be in the major leagues very shortly. So I'm probably more likely to trade for them than Reinel just because of the position.
I honestly don't think, I mean, if he's a catcher long-term, he's going to be the best hitting catcher in baseball. Like, I think it's going to be a first base DH. Like, maybe they try him at third a little bit. I think they're going to try to get that bat in the lineup as soon as they can. The catching's pretty good. Like, it's good enough that maybe, you know, you catch him for 60, 70 games a year, and then that's, like, perfect. Right. Mm-hmm. Then you're getting that catcher eligibility without all the wear and tear of being behind the plate all the time. It's one of those things where like the bat is so good that if he played any other position, he'd be ranked there. So
yeah, sure.
I kind of didn't want to fight it and figure that if he slides down the defensive spectrum, it doesn't hurt his fantasy value, even if it hurts his real life value. If he was a first base only prospect, I don't know how I could differentiate between his upside and that of like a Bryce Eldridge. Different bodies, but he's got better contact and plate approach than Eldridge even does now. You know, I have like no doubts that he's going to be able to hit and put up big numbers. So, you know, I'll stake my claim on that one a little bit. If I miss, I miss.
Oh, I have no issue with the rank. I completely agree with the rank.
Yeah.
I'm just a bit, it's not the type of guy I trade for if I'm in a rebuild.
Yeah. You know what? But maybe you can get him for a discounted price because he's a catcher, you know?
Yep.
I don't know. I still think he's super valuable and I have him rostered in a few places myself. Last one I wanted to call out here for our purposes is Aiden Miller. He made a big jump from 287 up to 86. The way that he finished the season and then like kind of taking the season, and I don't cover the Phillies, you know, year round, see him a lot in the beginning of the year and then sort of catch up at the end, was really impressive. And I think people sort of wrote off him a little bit too much based on like not having crazy production in Reading when you consider how young he was and his lack of experience, all that sort of stuff. He really took off. the speed is the part of it that I don't think I anticipated when he first came into pro ball. This is going to be a guy that maybe had 30 plus steal speed. He's got underlying data that would portend potential for 25 to 30 home runs, particularly if he plays in Philadelphia, which is a great home run hitting park. I also think that there might be some opportunity for him to come up and see some serious time with the Phillies this year. They've been holding on to him hard. They've avoided trading him or discussing him in a lot of trades. Teams have not been able to pry Miller loose in any of these deals. And obviously the Phillies are shopping for whales when they're out in the trade market, whether that's at the deadline, whether that's in the off season. So he's the kind of guy that's going to come up in those conversations, and they haven't moved him in any deals. And this is Dave Dombrowski, who likes to move prospects, but I will also say has a pretty good track record of trading the right guys and keeping the right prospects. Look at the Red Sox, for example. I'm all in on Aiden Miller. It took a while for me to sort of come fully around, but I think if you look at the underlying trades, you look at the fact that there's power, there's you know, hitting ability, what the batting average and on base look like. Ceiling wise, I don't know. I think there's a baseline for at least like a 10% walk rate, a reasonable strikeout rate, maybe like a 250 plus average. I'm talking more floor here. But I think when we talk upside, there's potential for maybe 30 seasons. He's not quite there yet with the angles in terms of the projecting out the 30 home runs, but he hits the ball really, really hard. And Philadelphia, of course, is a great landing spot, great lineup, great park. And I think he could honestly be up at some point in 2026.
Yeah, I'm hoping he is. I have him in the two DCs I'm in. We have him. So I am hoping he's up. I think the reports that he's like able to play an adequate major league shortstop is definitely helpful. For RoboScout, the peak projection is 267 average, 347 on base, 20 home runs, 30 stolen bases. You talked about the power, the 106 90th exit velocity. He doesn't chase. His contact is average, so it's not one of those things where he's selling out for power. Like you said, the angles aren't the greatest. He only had a 15% barrel rate, a regressed barrel rate. I actually don't have the raw barrel rate. But he's only in his age 21 season. It's the ceiling is pretty high considering he finished in AAA. And you're right. Dombrowski is one who trades prospects, but he keeps the ones that he wants to keep. So I have high hopes for Aiden Miller, and I'm hoping he'll be a good power speed threat as early as this season.
Absolutely. All right. So we ran through some of the big names, some of the big movers, some of our logic behind the top 500 list. Going to wrap it up here. Certainly feel free to, you know, pepper us with questions in the comments if you want us to discuss any of this stuff over the next couple of weeks. We're going to be back next week. We're going to be talking about catchers, Dylan. Wonderful catchers. More catchers talk. We had a little bit today. We're going to talk some more Raynel Rodriguez next week as well. For Jeff, for Dylan, this has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast.
Cheers.